It's our pleasure to have Arthur Lipstein here to tell us about 4D ambi-twister strings.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak here today. David Skinner already gave a very, very lovely overview of the twister string story. So what I'd like to do in my talk is to focus on one aspect of that story, notably the story in four dimensions. And the work I'm going to describe is some developments over the past year or so, I'll be covering some work I did with Yvonne Geyer and Lionel Mason, a paper I put out a few months ago, and in the end I'd like to describe some work in progress that should appear in the very near future in collaboration with Volker Chimeras. So let me just begin by overviewing some very, very basic concepts, which should, of course, be very familiar to this audience, which is that in four dimensions, a null momentum can be decomposed into two spinners, as I display over there, lambda and lambda tilde, where the index alpha runs from 1 to 2. And it was understood already some time ago that when one expresses amplitudes in terms of these spinners, they simplify dramatically. And one of the earliest examples of this was the Park-Taylor formula for tree-level scattering of gluons in the MHV sector. So in particular, the case where two of the external gluons have negative helicity and the rest have positive helicity. In that case, when the amplitude is expressed in terms of these spinner variables, where these brackets simply correspond to inner products of the spinners, the amplitude takes this remarkably simple form. And the simplicity of this form suggests that there is some deeper mathematical structure. So in particular, if you express these spinners, if you think of them as being homogeneous coordinates of a two-dimensional sphere, then in fact, the denominator of the Park-Taylor formula just looks like a product of correlation functions on a sphere. So this formula really begs for some kind of interpretation in terms of two-dimensional CFT. And so that the natural question to ask is there a way to reformulate Yang-Mills theory that makes this structure manifest? And after some developments, Berkowitz and Witten found that the answer is yes, at least for N equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory. And their conclusion was that N equals 4 super Yang-Mills can be reformulated as a string theory whose target space is super twister space, CP3/4. And this is very different from the duality between N equals 4 super Yang-Mills and type 2B string theory in ADS 5 times S5, because whereas the ADS-CFT duality is a strong weak duality, the duality to twister string theory is actually weak, and actually, strictly speaking, it only holds a tree level, because it turns out the super twister string actually contains not only super Yang-Mills in its spectrum, but also conformal supergravity. So let me maybe just quickly review the concept of a twister for those who may be unfamiliar with it. Of course, David already did a nice job of this. I'll just give a working definition of what a twister is. So at some basic level, what you can think of, the way you can think of a twister is a four-component object whose four components are the two spinner components. Can be written in terms of two spinners. The first spinner on top is just the same spinner that appears in the decomposition of a null momentum in four dimensions. And then you have another spinner on the bottom, which actually isn't independent of the one on top. They're related by what's called an incidence relation, where X is some point in four-dimensional space-time. And from this incidence relation, the first thing you notice is that twisters are projective objects. So in other words, if I rephase the left and right hand, if I rephase mu and lambda in the same way, then of course X will be preserved. And in the case where you want to talk about a supersymmetric theory, then you can augment the twister with these fermionic components. And for example, in N equals 4 super Yang-Mills, the index A would run from 1 to 4. And it's now a well-known story that by combining insights from twister string theory and from the ADS-CFT correspondence, people have obtained very powerful techniques for computing scattering amplitudes in N equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory, which are not only of practical value, but also have revealed new symmetries and new dualities and new mathematical structures in the amplitudes, which have been intensely studied. But of course, the natural question is, can these ideas be extended to other theories, such as gravity or super Yang-Mills with less than maximal supersymmetry? And the answer to this question is yes, at least at tree level. And so let me just describe the basic ingredients that went into this that will be relevant for the 4D ambi twister string. So the first major breakthrough was actually due to Andrew Hodges, who essentially wrote down the analog of the Park-Taylor formula, but for gravity amplitudes. So whereas in the Park-Taylor formula, you had this Park-Taylor denominator that was basically a product of spinners, for gravity, the analog of that is a determinant. And this matrix H is referred to as the Hodges matrix, whose elements basically have this form. Essentially, the diagonal elements encode the soft limits of the MHV scattering amplitudes. And then after a lot of further developments, ultimately David Skinner proposed the analog of the Berkowitz-Witten twister string except for N equals 8 supergravity. And the proposal is simply that N equals 8 supergravity is equivalent to a twister string theory with target space CP3 slash 8 rather than CP3 slash 4. And I'll come back to this later in the talk. The other major development was what are called the scattering equations, which also were nicely reviewed in Dave's talk, so I'll sort of be brief about it. Historically, the scattering equations actually appeared some time ago in the context of scattering of strings, but in the tensionless limit. So what Gross and Mende found was in this limit, you can basically compute the amplitudes using a saddle point approximation, and for example, at genus zero, where the string world sheet is just a sphere, it turns out that the location of the vertex operators become localized onto solutions of these so-called scattering equations, where sigma I is understood to be some complex number in the plane, which corresponds to some point on the two-sphere after stereographic projection, and ki is the external momentum of the ith particle, which is taken to be null. And in a remarkable development, Cachazzo, Hay, and Yuan found that exactly the same equations govern scattering amplitudes of point particle theories, by which I mean Yang-Mills theories and gravity theories without any supersymmetry in any space-time dimension. And what this strongly suggests is that even ordinary Yang-Mills and Einstein gravity have some kind of description in terms of a world sheet. And that description was basically found by Lionel Mason and David Skinner, and it goes under the name of ambi-twister strings, which can in some sense be thought of as a chiral infinite tension limit of the RNS string. And just to give you a flavor of what this model looks like, I write out a few terms in the action. I neglect ghosts and fermions and so forth. But it's essentially a chiral theory because d bar of x, the equations of motion for p imply that d bar of x is equal to zero, so x depends on only one complex direction of the world sheet. And furthermore, you have this Lagrange multiplier constraint that enforces that p is null. So in other words, one ultimately what this means is that the external particles are massless. And very remarkably, the correlation functions of the vertex operators of this model precisely reproduce the CHY formulae. And moreover, Lionel Mason, David Skinner showed that this model is critical in d equals 26 for the case of the bosonic string and d equals 10 for the case of the superstring. Very and sort of the central charge counting works in a very similar way to the way it does in for the RNS string. So now what I'd like to focus on in the rest of the talk is what happens in four dimensions. So in four dimensions, there's sort of a more standard twistorial description of the ambi-twister string, and that actually leads to some very very remarkable things. So first of all, let me describe what the 4D ambi-twister space is. It's basically very similar to the twister I showed you on the fourth slide of my talk, but in addition to having a Z-twister, one also has a W-twister, which is essentially thought of as the canonical conjugate. And the spinners, the components of the twister, obey a slightly more complicated incidence relation, and really the key point to take away from this slide is that this is a non-chiral superspace. And the way we exploit this is to essentially associate the Z twisters with positive helicity particles, ultimately, and the W twister is to be associated with negative helicity particles. So ultimately, somehow the helicity of the amplitudes will be encoded in the ambi-twister string amplitudes in a completely different way than they were in the Berkowitz-Witten twister string or David's twister string. And that will actually lead to some big simplifications. So also let me write down the action for the ambi-twister string for the case that describes gravity. So in that case, the action is quite simple. It's simply z dot z d bar w. But there's also a world sheet symmetry. There's a supersymmetry on the world sheet. So there are super partners rho and rho tilde. And in addition, one gauges a lot of currents in this world sheet, which can essentially be thought of as the supercurrents associated with the world sheet supersymmetry. So there are eight of them, eight bosonic, eight fermionic, which I list below. And you may ask, why is it necessary to have fermions on the world sheet? And at some working level, it's clear if you just stare at the MHV amplitude for gravity that was developed by Hodges. The point is that the key structure in that amplitude is that it has a determinant. And you all know that when you compute correlation functions of fermions, that gives rise to determinants. And so that's ultimately the purpose in life of rho and rho tilde. It's essentially to give you the determinant of the Hodges matrix. Another key difference between this 4D ambi-twister model and the ones of Berkowitz, Witten, and Skinner are that we take the world sheet fields to be spinners. Also, as was explained in David's overview talk. All right, let me quickly review what the vertex operators in this theory look like. As you can see, they depend on rho and rho tilde. These H's basically correspond to wave functions in twister space. There's something called the Penrose transform that allows you to map wave functions in twister space into wave functions in space-time. And when you apply this mapping, essentially what you find is that these wave functions just map into plane waves in space-time. And the other thing to take away from this slide is that there are two types of vertex operators, V and V tilde, which will describe positive and negative positive and negative helicity particles, respectively. It turns out that it's also pretty easy to compute correlation functions in the ambi-twister string. So let me just sketch how that calculation goes. I'm not going to worry too much about gauge fixing and ghosts. Just for the sake of simplicity. So schematically, the way these correlation functions look is that for an n to the k minus 2 MHV amplitude, you'll have k vertex operators with negative helicity and n minus k vertex operators with positive helicity. And then the trick is to take these exponentials here and to combine them with the action. And after doing so, you get the following additional contributions to the action. And then you notice that the world sheet fields mu tilde and mu appear nowhere else in the correlation functions, so you can just integrate them out. And upon integrating them out, you find that the following equations of motion for the world sheet fields lambda and lambda tilde, and at gen is zero, they are uniquely solved by these equations. And what you'll notice, the basic structure to notice here is the appearance of a Green's function on a two-sphere, the 1 over sigma minus sigma I. And then when you plug these solutions back into the delta functions, which appear in the vertex operators, that's what implies the 4D analog of the scattering equations, but this time refined by helicity. Okay. And then in the end, the amplitudes that come out of this calculation look extremely simple. So I only described the case of gravity so far, but there's an analogous story for Yang-Mills. And so this is the entire tree-level S matrix of Yang-Mills. This is the entire tree-level S matrix of gravity. I don't have time really to go into the details of these formulas, but let me just point out some important features. So first of all, you have this product of delta functions, which essentially impose the four-dimensional scattering equations. In the case of gravity, you have this determinant of the Hodges matrix. To go from gravity to Yang-Mills, essentially what you do is you replace this determinant with a Park-Taylor factor. And then the other key feature of these equations is that you have this parameter n, which corresponds to the target space supersymmetry. So in particular, when n is equal to 8 here, that should describe n equals 8 supergravity. And when n is equal to 0, that should describe just ordinary pure Einstein gravity. So the point is that using the 4D ambi twister approach, you obtain tree-level formulas for both Yang-Mills and gravity with any amount of supersymmetry, which is quite nice. And furthermore, these formulas are a lot simpler than previous ones because they basically don't involve any integrals over moduli of curves. So these are very, very elegant equations, and so this makes you feel that they must be good for something. And so what I'd like to describe in the remainder of the talk are two applications of the 4D ambi twister approach, which actually imply some very concrete and perhaps even surprising results regarding the perturbative structure of gravity. So the first application that I'd like to describe has to do with what are called soft theorems, and these were described very nicely in Jan Plefka's talk. So I won't go into great detail there. But essentially, what the soft theorems tell you is how amplitudes behave when you take the energy of an external particle to zero. And it turns out that when you take the energy of an external graviton to zero in an n-point amplitude, you recover an n-1 point amplitude times some prefactor, which turns out to be universal, meaning that it doesn't really care about the species of the other particles participating in the amplitude. And so the leading term in this expansion was found by Steven Weinberg all the way back in 1965, and more recently people have found the subleading and sub-subleading terms. In particular, Cacciazzo and Strominger discovered this new sub-subleading term. And furthermore, Strominger and various combinations of collaborators proposed a new way of understanding soft limits of the scattering amplitudes in terms of a certain asymptotic symmetry known as BMS symmetry, which was very nicely explained in Jan Plefka's talk, so I won't go into detail too much. Rather, what I'd like to do is explain that, in fact, the soft theorems in their relation to asymptotic symmetries becomes completely transparent from the point of view of ambi-twister string theory. And the key idea is that from the point of view of ambi-twister string theory, the way you achieve a soft limit is simply to take a vertex operator and a correlation function to go soft. And when you do that, you can simply Taylor expand the vertex operator in powers of the soft momentum, and then each term in the Taylor expansion simply corresponds to a leading or subleading or sub-subleading soft theorem. And it turns out that because from the point of view of the ambi-twister string, it's very easy to compute the soft theorems because the vertex operators have a very lovely property that they can be written as contour integrals, and so the soft theorem just follows from integrating a soft vertex operator around each of the hard ones and adding up the residues. It's a very, very elementary calculation. I think I'll skip this slide for now. And furthermore, you can also use the ambi-twister string to study the algebra of soft limits. And to do so, what one should do is consider the commutator of consecutive soft limits. So in other words, suppose I take particle n-1 soft and then particle n, and then I take particle n and then n-1 soft, and then I take the difference of these two limits. It turns out that if one discards contributions which arise from integrating one soft vertex operator around another before it becomes soft, it's possible to encode the algebra of soft limits in terms of the OPE of soft vertex operators on the world sheet. And surprisingly, what one finds is that the algebra of the leading soft graviton limits is abelian, while the algebra of subleading soft graviton limits is non-abelian and actually appears to be different than the Virasoro symmetry. So in particular, I get an infinite graded algebra, which contains the GL2C symmetry as a subgroup, but otherwise bears no resemblance to the Virasoro group. And finally, I'd like to describe some recent progress on understanding the loop amplitudes of n=8 supergravity from this point of view. So as David said, it turns out that the 4D ambi-twister string for n=8 supergravity is critical and non-anomalous if you do not gauge fixed Virasoro symmetry. And so what this is saying is that the theory really doesn't want you to gauge fix the Virasoro symmetry. But remember that in the ordinary string, gauge fixing Virasoro symmetry introduces a central charge -26 And furthermore, the Virasoro symmetry, when imposed on the Hilbert space, removes all of the negative norm states. But it turns out that remarkably for the 4D, for the critical 4D MB twister string, after just imposing global symmetries and the other 8 world sheet supersymmetries that I described on an earlier slide, that is actually powerful enough to remove all the unphysical states, leaving one simply with n equals 8 supergravity and nothing else. And one way to think about that is that one should think of the critical 4D MB twister string as an analog of the RNS string in light cone gauge, where all of the longitudinal degrees of freedom have already been removed in some sense, and only on-shell degrees of freedom remain. Very good. And furthermore, so if you accept this point of view, you can just go ahead and compute loop amplitudes. And you find that at least at one loop, the amplitudes are quite sensible. So I think I'm running out of time, so I really don't have time to describe the details of this formula. Let me just point out some basic features. So once again, you have a product of delta functions, but this time they're generalized. We're computing on a torus, so they involve the Green's functions on a torus rather than the Green's functions on a two-sphere. And the key aspect of this formula is that you have an integral over the zero modes, lambda of lambda and lambda tilde. So essentially what this looks like is the kind of one loop integral that you obtain from on-shell diagrams of n equals 4 super Yang Mills. In particular, you have an integral over an on-shell loop momentum, and in this case, the integral over the complex structure of the world sheet is sort of analogous to the integral over a BCFW shift that one obtains in the on-shell diagram formalism. But it turns out that this amplitude has a very beautiful and non-trivial property, notably that it's modular invariant, and so in fact there's actually a natural UV cutoff in this amplitude, coming from the fact that d tau is being integrated over the fundamental domain. So I'm now out of time, so let me just summarize. The three main points of the talk are that 4D ambi twister string theory gives rise to new tree-level formulae for gauge and gravity amplitudes with any amount of supersymmetry, number one. And number two, what I've tried to argue is that it provides new insight into soft theorems and symmetries of the gravitational S matrix. And the hope is that it may also provide new insight into the finiteness of n equals 8 supergravity. And it seems that the feature that is common between these two developments is that Virasoro symmetry does not play a crucial role. So I think I'll end there. Thank you.
So we're cutting into our poster sessions and coffee. So if there's maybe one quick question and we could save the rest. Okay, Henrik.
Yeah, you said your one loop amplitude had a natural UV cutoff.
Yes.
Does it mean that it's finite in 8 dimensions?
This is 4 dimensional. I mean, this is strictly 4 dimensional. I mean, 4 dimensions is built into this. So.
Okay, so with that, let's thank Arthur again.